Well, howdy there, partner. And welcome to Board Game Point of View. We here are Spitshine Bangle on the 10-gallon howl, Mr. Vassal himself, and a mighty proud member of the Dice Tower Network. So saddle up now, the show is about to start.
Welcome to the Board Game Point of View. We are a group dedicated to the betterment of all people under the banner of tabletop gaming and also a very proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Tonight, I'm joined by Steven.
What is up, y'all?
And Seth.
Right back at ya.
Nice. And
what?
We've got a lot on our show notes. We'll see if we can get through them all. But
spoiler,
first,
we won't.
Yeah, my money is that we won't get through at least 75% of it.
Nice. Yeah, that's a pretty good guess. You know, that's a strong number, but I think you could be right.
No, I've always been good at 50-50 odds, so.
Wait.
Oh, man. Exactly. See, the joke almost went over your head, but you caught it at the last minute.
Dude, jokes don't go over my head. I'm too fast. I would catch them.
Shout out. Dude, that movie's coming out, by the way, the sequel.
Get out.
May 4th. We're going to go for my birthday.
Yo, are we talking about the life segment right now as well?
This is the life segment. It is indeed.
I think it is.
Dude, my birthday is right around the corner, and Seth and I are going to party it up like a couple of fiends. And
dude, that's
it's going to be
sure.
Awesome. And probably play some board games. Maybe even some of these new board games that Adam got. You can just mail them down to us, man.
I'll stop in
Billings.
True. Dude, you have to bring Russian Roulette because...
Oh, yeah.
I heard a rumor, Adam, that may have arrived recently.
It did indeed, along with a handful of others. But
nice.
First, I want to hear about this garage sale at Rook's, Seth.
Dude, I have so much to say.
Well, start saying it. Spit it out. I want to hear about it.
All right. So this weekend, last weekend, I should say, it was Rook's garage sale / yard sale event where they let people from the community bring in their things that they're looking to offload, sell them. The store also kind of sells things that it wants to get rid of at discount prices. So there's a lot of good stuff going on. And fortunately for me, this coincided with my tax return coming back.
Ayo.
So, I mean, I very diligently took half of it and put it in savings. But the other half, I'm like, you know what? Let's buy some stuff. So the first thing I bought was over 150 dice in a vase for a very decent price. I won't talk prices on this, you know. I
mean, it was only $5 per dice.
Yeah, no, right?
Oh, man.
So I got like a whole bunch more dice for role-playing games, 40 D20s, and then a whole host of other kinds of dice. Pretty legit. Some of them, of course, are pretty lame, but some of them are pretty cool. So all in all, I have bulk dice now, so when I'm having someone cast an 8th level spell, I can roll all 12 of those D10 myself.
Nice.
That'll be amazing. Lots of damage.
You've made it, man. You're finally have
it,
achieved
right?
The level of just professionalism.
Exactly.
That
if you're gonna,
one requires
you're gonna be
in
a
DM.
You have to have the big bag of dice that you bring around and you can supply people with and just have.
On your person at all times.
Yeah, exactly. I put it in my backpack. It's like
in
5 pounds.
Or in your trench coat, you know, like in the coat, and you just open it. You need some dice.
No, luckily, yeah. My cargo shorts have pockets that I can put all this dice in.
The pockets are actually deeper than the shorts are long. So you can see the inside of the pocket out from underneath the bottom of the
All right, girls get away with that. So
Do
I
they?
Can get away with that.
I don't know if I've ever seen that, but
see, the
you are
just
the ladies'
really
man here. So.
Yeah. So, that sounds pretty cool, right? Like a win at the the game garage sale already, but wait.
Right.
There's more.
So, there was also a large cardboard box just filled to the brim with D&D Wizards of the Coast miniatures. This box was probably like 1 foot by, like 1.5 by 3 feet or something. It was large. Lots of miniatures. And to my surprise, it was only $1 per miniature, where usually these things can get pretty expensive. So I ended up buying over 20 miniatures as well. I bought a whole bunch that would sort of fit with the party I'm running now. I mean, none of them actually really fit super well, unfortunately. But, and then I bought just some other, you know, like enemies, some other cool looking miniatures that I'd want to use at some point. So now, not only do I have overflow of dice, but I also have a modest collection of miniatures as well.
So, dude, there you go, really man.
I'm transcending the just coerced into a DM and turning into a real one.
Nice.
And then, finally, there was a lot of Armana. Now, I mean, when I say a lot, like, someone was just offloading their collection, so it was just one big lot. pretty expensive, but it was pretty much half off market price for this whole thing, and included, of course, the core set, and then, like, 12 expansions, probably more, actually. Yeah, no, definitely more. And so, my roommate, Aaron, had gotten into Armada very cheaply in the past, and gotten just like one expansion and the core set. And so that was the first game I played a couple weeks back. And so after that, we're like, okay, we need to, if we have the chance getting into Armada, we can do it. And so this showed up. And so we split it three ways with some other random guy.
Nice.
Some guy we play X-Wing with, funny enough. So like I took the core set since they both had core sets already. And I took some of the other Rebel expansion, so I have the Home One expansion. I've got
nice.
Some extra fighter squadrons. I've got a torpedo boat, the Assault Frigate Mark II. So a few like just nice large ships that I can use, and the core set for a very respectable price. And so I took the plunge. It was actually a very hard decision. I didn't know if I wanted to spend that much money on Armada, not knowing when I'd get to play it,
right,
or how often, or how much I would really enjoy after playing more of it. But I played another game yesterday, the full 400 point with objectives dealio, and it was pretty amazing. So
awesome.
Safe nice, to say I'm dude. A convert.
Well, congratulations. That's pretty awesome.
Thanks. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the game?
I've got a lot of thoughts, but I like it a lot. Pretty much there's the differences from X-Wing that I've noticed in my few plays, but just kind of like looking at lists and ships and whatever and upgrades, there's a lot less focus. I think one of my favorite things is just the absence of defense dice, because there's just a lot less focus on trying to survive by just not taking damage, and it's more just like mitigating it or making sure that you do more damage or have the correct orders in place for your ships. So it kind of eliminates some of the frustration of, well, in X-Wing, you need to have these hyper-accurate dice, or else you're not going to be able to get damage through on these hyper-defensive ships. And so then the game just kind of is a stalemate, or certain things just aren't viable. And I have no idea about, like, competitive Armada, but from the little bit I've played, it seems like that's just less of a problem, where your ships are always going to be doing damage, because these capital ships literally cannot roll defense dice to evade them. So as long as you're focused firing and you're rolling accuracies and all this stuff, you can shoot through a ship's defenses with even a small pool of dice. So it seems like it's more rewarding then for having ships that can be accurate with their little bit, just because you can do more damage. But then it's also, I kit out a ship in my last game that I did 12 damage to a ship in one turn. I just instantly blew up I was playing Rebels, and I instantly blew up a Raider class Corvette just in one shot. It was just amazing, and like that kind of stuff is very hard to do.
Dude, did you have like Jack Porkins or what?
Dude, he was my admiral, actually.
Yeah.
I kicked out Akbar, put Jack Porkins in the home one.
That's where he belongs, man.
Exactly. I agree.
Either that or shoving a blaster down Vader's throat. Am I right?
Let's just say that at the end of Rogue One, if he was there, it would have been a different story.
So true.
Because he could hold it. All right. He could hold it. those plans.
Yep.
So yeah, it seems like there's less of just the focus on, oh, well, my ship has to be able to do the optimal maneuvers and always have focus and target lock every turn, or always have these rerolls that I can only get if I'm doing certain moves. And just these things are happening kind of regardless, and so it's more about positioning, funnily enough. And since you can't correct course as easily in this game, it's also a lot about planning ahead with your maneuvers. So
right. And the way you maneuver is quite a bit different from X-Wing 2, isn't it? Don't you have templates that turn and snake and...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not secretly choosing where you're going to go beforehand. You can react during a round to where other ships have gone. But the thing is that a lot of your big ships can only move very slowly, and so if their path gets blocked, you don't actually move at all. So there was a time where I was just ramming my... MC-30 into an Imperial class Star Destroyer, and we were just bumping because I couldn't make it past him.
If only it was a hammerhead, right? You could have just shoved him around.
Well, the hammerheads are one of the next ships that's coming out, actually. And one of the only things they've really revealed for them are that when you run into a ship with the hammerhead, they take a face-up damage, and you only take a face-down damage, so...
Oh, man.
It seems to imply there may be some sort of strategy in ramming ships. And in the end, my flagship was destroyed by a gladiator ramming into it, so... There's also that. But I was able to take out a victory-class Star Destroyer with Tycho Selchu, the hero in the A-Wing.
Dude, there you go, man.
Yep. A-Wings are awesome.
Yeah, so I've just barely scratched the surface of Armada, but so far, really enjoying it.
I like how if you read about A-Wings, they actually would remove the shield generators and like torpedo bays and all of that, and just strip them down so that they could just go as fast as humanly possible.
Right.
And then that way they could actually compete with the interceptors.
But that's right.
It's still pretty insane when you think about it. Like, no shields, nothing, just like straight up baller flying one of those into battle. But
Exactly. Not as baller as an interceptor, because they do still have shields, those cowards. But yeah, no, even in X-Wing, there's the upgrade that lets you trade out a torpedo slot for a decrease in cost so that you can just fly more A-Wings faster.
I wonder if they almost go for the same strategy as the snowspeeders, where it's like, hey, our defenses are kind of crap, but we're so tiny and fast that hopefully we just will avoid getting hit, even though it doesn't really work that great for them in the movies, but, you know.
Right.
It's worth a shot, I suppose.
No, I think that is what the strategy is. Because we all know that those TIE fighters don't have targeting computers.
Except for Vader's.
Because
he hacks.
Because, yeah, he can't use the Force. He literally turns on his targeting computer.
Well, it'll be fun to hear how you compare and contrast the two as you dive headlong into Armada now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think X-Wing is still my one love. It was my first love.
Right?
So... nothing's going to be taking that spot, but I can definitely say that there's a few more games of Armada that I want to play and a few more ships that I want to try out already, so I'm excited to see where it goes.
Have you signed up for competitive play yet?
No. The next tournament is in about a month, but I don't think I'll be here anymore. So.
Okay.
I mean, on this earth.
Wow.
No. I know.
There you go.
You're taken to the stars for real. All this has just been in training.
I wish.
Straight up like Matt Damon.
But there's still actually one more game that I was able to acquire at this yard sale. And I mean, this might be the least of my acquisitions. But I bought a cool mini or not game, Besieged Sons of the Abyss. Sort of just a tower defense or just defense style game, which obviously has a ton of minis. And so since that was discounted pretty heavily, I was like, I might as well. Even though I've heard some mixed reviews saying that it just takes a very long time and it can get stale for replays. But to me, it seems like the kind of game I'd enjoy. And honestly, I think all three of us would enjoy just playing this game and role-playing out being stuck in a castle with these hordes of monsters attacking us.
Nice.
It'd be pretty dope.
That would be pretty awesome, yeah.
So I just thought, for all these miniatures, right? Which are very nice miniatures, and for a game that I'll probably play at least a couple times, even just look, I've been reading the rules and it seems pretty interesting.
Right.
I went for it. I took the plunge.
Cool Mini or Not makes really high quality games, and the only tower defense game I've ever played has been Castle Panic, which I really didn't enjoy all that much. So I would love to play another tower defense style game, and coming from Cool Mini or Not, already I think that's a plus.
There well, you go.
For the brief period of time that I may be back in Billings over the summer, I'll make sure to have it there and we can try it out.
Awesome. Now, we've got a few games on our list to review here, but I know you guys recently played the expansion to Scythe, and I want to hear a little bit about that. That should be good,
okey
right?
Okey-dokey, Adam.
Well, better yet, speaking of the I Hate My Life segment, I mean, life segment.
Invaders from afar. People invade from afar. Crap goes down. Right. Bombs go off. Traps are triggered. Seth was triggered.
I was pretty triggered.
Getting all kinds of salty.
But in reality, though, are the invaders really from afar if they've been there the whole time?
Well, they're from underground. That's what they're telling you.
We knew where they were going to be. They were just traveling for months.
Yeah. They're like, well, the only place in this whole area where someone could make camp is right here in this grove of trees, so let's just keep an eye on it. And then as soon as these invaders come in, we'll know. It doesn't really change any of the like gameplay mechanics necessarily. It does include two new factions, Tagawa, which is basically just a Japanese type faction, and Albion, who, as Seth would say, are incredibly Gaelic, just the Gauls coming in from the Great White North or something.
Dude, it's a red-haired dude and a boar. Like, those are literally their two attributes.
And it's pretty cool. Seth, you got pretty salty.
We're just in a lead with that.
Yes. You also declared that you don't like the game. So
that is true.
It was a very interesting experience. My impression was rather positive, though. But to be fair, I was playing as Tagawa, and their faction ability is kind of OP. And so that is why I had fun and why Seth was mad.
Well,
so there you go.
That wasn't all of it, to be fair. I will say that I think the ability is strong, just like one-on-one. I think it's very much intended for kind of one-on-one fights, right?
Yes, Albion's faction ability is that the leader of the faction, your little character miniature, can place just flags at four different locations around the board. And then at that point, you can use a movement action to actually teleport to wherever that flag is. So that's just a way to jump around the map quickly, and it can come in handy. But the Togawa faction ability is actually, it's similar. You also get four little tiles that you can place, but they're actually booby traps.
Oh.
And as soon as an enemy, you know, your opponent's character lands on that space and triggers this trap, you flip the little token over, and that player then receives a penalty. And these penalties are actually pretty strong. One makes your opponent lose, I think it was three, or possibly even four, combat cards.
Wow.
So that's, I think, that can be, yeah, I think pretty, it was devastating.
Two or three for the combat cards.
It was four, was it $4 then?
Yeah, four coins, or like three, yep, power or three popularity, I think.
Yeah.
They were pretty, so maybe, brutal.
It was probably two combat cards, three popularity, three power, or four coins. It may not even sound like a whole heck of a lot, but if you're able to strategically place these, and like at one point Seth was sort of trying to do kind of an offensive maneuver, if you will. He was like coming right at me, and I placed a trap, and you get to choose which one you place, of course. So I put the one down where he lost his combat cards, and it was towards the start of the game, so he only had two or three in his hand. And then that totally gave me the upper hand when we did fight, because he didn't have those cards to add on to his power. And so it proved to be quite devastating in the long run. And then you can actually also later on use the booby trap tokens basically the same way as Albion uses them, and you can actually teleport to them and rearm them even. So all the way around, it's kind of crazy. Just, okay, crap's blowing up, and then you just poof to it, and you rearm it, and then you poof away.
That was pretty messed up.
So I want to hear Seth's side of the story, because it sounds like he had a pretty poor time and has now decided that he is retired from playing Scythe.
No,
that...
Okay. Let's back up. I don't think Steven was intending to construe it this way, but it wasn't because I just kind of got wrecked in a couple of the turns and lost the game that I had, like, not that I didn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just after the second play that I was like, okay, the first time wasn't a fluke. This game, I don't think, is for me, or I'm playing it the wrong way. But we can talk about that in a second.
Okay.
So it wasn't, I didn't just kind of get like stomped on and was like, this game sucks. But I mean, that did actually happen. So, but that's not the reason why. So yeah, pretty much what happened that made me salty from the get go is that right at the beginning of the game, Steven popped on over to my location via a tunnel. So, you know, perfectly normal. Attacked me, and I didn't play like any power, so I just like let him win, intending to retaliate. And so he beat me handily, dropped a trap, and then on my turn I was like, okay, well, I'll just attack you back, because I had a whole bunch of power and he had almost none but just one combat card left. But when I attacked him, the combat card he had was like a five power one or something, so I just lost again, and I was like, well, and then also, I think I lost all my popularity as well. I think
you,
that was
dude,
the first
you had,
trap
like,
you
had zero popularity for a really long time,
yeah, I
actually
had zero popularity for most of the game, because I just lost at the beginning, and then was like, well, that's over.
Well, you were also role-playing as kind of a tool intentionally. Like, every time you had an encounter card, you were choosing the meaner of the options, but...
Yeah. That's because I didn't care about my popularity. I wanted resources, which did not help me. But then I think after those two turns, I was a little put out. I was like, okay, that was annoying. An annoying way to start off the game.
Right.
I feel like I should have won at least one of those battles, but no. And so then I was like, okay, this game's broken, because the combat cards are... what's the word, like, inexplicably more powerful than having power. Like, it's just no contest because they're hidden information and they can go to just very high values. So even just getting one combat card or taking two power, it's like not even a choice because you have the potential to get like five power out of it that your opponent doesn't know you have. I mean, in the end, I realized that it wasn't that much better simply because you have to have multiple units to play multiple cards.
Mm-hmm.
But then for the rest of the game, I think I was just falling into the same trap of trying to play this game like a area control game.
Right.
At all. Which, I mean, I had a pretty decent like structure going on. I was pumping out metal and creating mechs. But that didn't help me at all.
Because it's felt a Euro pretty bad. Game, right? It's,
yeah.
It's definitely
well,
a Euro
Well, not only is
style.
It a Euro game, but the combat or the area control is like 10% of the game. It's not even like 30%.
Right.
And I somehow had not realized this yet, but still tried to play it the wrong way.
Well, no, I mean, to be
and
fair,
I controlled the factory for the whole game.
Yeah,
thinking
I never
that would help me as well.
Stepped foot in the factory,
and that didn't help me at all either.
Like, the only,
I don't know.
I should clarify. I did kind of imply that I just wrecked you, and it was only unfortunate for like a couple of turns, but really, it was pretty even, honestly. I'm pretty sure the final score, even, I had maybe 77 and you had 72, I want to say.
It was
pretty
like
close.
Points, definitely.
And so it was a good game, but yeah, it's just the difference of trying to focus on the more Euro mechanic of it, which is, of course, the more predominant side of it, versus playing it, as Seth said, like an area control game, like any other, you know, Risk or Cry Havoc or what have you.
Right.
And to his credit, though, Scythe is a very interesting game, but it is hard to kind of figure out because it really does look like an area control game.
Right.
Like, that's kind of how it comes across. And so getting those strategies and thoughts out of your head and focus on a mechanic that doesn't seem like that big of a deal is kind of strange. But then in the end, it's that little mechanic that actually allows you to win, you know?
Right.
And so it's different for sure. And so basically, it's not so much Scythe in particular, maybe a little bit, but we're also coming back around to the fact that Seth has said before that Euro games in general are just not really his cup of tea.
Right.
And this is just kind of another example of that.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd like this game more if it just took out the map, right? Like, no mechs, no map. Like, and then replace those mechanics because it's lying to me. It lies. It's like, buy the mechs, get their abilities, use them, and like do cool stuff, but it doesn't work. It never works.
Well, the only thing you really had going for you is you had the mechs on the board before I did.
Yeah.
And you got to the factory and you stayed on the factory, and with how you were positioned with your little armies and stuff, I was relatively limited in mobility. Like, the only real, attacks I was able to even do against you really ended up being the whole transporting my guys in, rearming my little traps to just kind of troll you a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and then leaving. Like, I really couldn't get very close to you because of all of your troops. So even though we weren't just having nonstop combat, that side of like the area control, if you will, did benefit you because I mean, I did miss out on stuff, but it did.
But that's like in the end, that didn't like swing it in my favor. It seemed like maybe it swung it a little bit. Obviously, like I had the factory, so I had a good card that I was using, but like that was like the only thing that was allowing me to maybe catch up. And another thing is that Albion's mechs are when you fight, either get power or the enemy loses power. So it's like to, again, incentivize me to fight. So I'm like, okay, I'll fight. And then it's like, oh, well, why fight?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tricky. But I will say, I mean, with how the game started, me winning two combats back-to-back put me up, you know, 2 stars to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I had quite the advantage super early on. And then as we it came down to like 5 points, and mm-hmm. the only reason I even had those points is because I completed like one more of my little bonus objectives than you or something. Like, it was super close. So I know the area control and the combat still seems like it's doing nothing, but I mean, you did actually come back quite a bit. So
But I'm just saying, I felt like I should have been up with the controlling of the board and like the rushing of the production of mechs that I had, but it didn't really actually do a whole lot for me. Well, so it feels like it was wasted, even though then I sure was able to get my engine or whatever going at least decent, moderately. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, well, yeah. Seth, you're going to have to play this game one more time.
That's we've agreed that I will play it one more time.
Yeah. Not only just to give it another shot, but you need to play the second expansion for Scythe, which will be coming out this year.
Oh, boy.
Yes, it's called The Wind Gambit. I'm thrilled. Yeah.
And I have seen that. It looks pretty intense.
Yeah, and it's going to add airships, so you're going to be able to move around the board.
So just another unit that allows you to move around the board, but yet gives you no advantage to moving around the board.
Well, if you're thinking about resources and not killing people, then maybe it will give you an advantage. But
no, I couldn't ever get into his base. Like, who just has resources hanging out like in the middle of nowhere where I can go attack it? No, I couldn't go get into his base and attack it. It wouldn't have ever worked.
This the Wind Gambit also adds 7 more traps for Tagawa.
I hate you, James Stagmeyer.
You don't mean that. Take it back.
Well,
oh man.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about something that we all really enjoyed, and I'm talking about D&D. We got the chance.
Did we all really enjoy that?
What's that?
I said, did we all really enjoy that?
Yeah.
Parts of it.
Well, that's the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, after you left that night, Adam, I was just telling Seth about how much you've been hating it, how you've been texting me outside of the group and be like, oh man, Steven, Seth's D&D session is so terrible and I'm only doing it to be nice to him. No, I forwarded him the emails, all of it. Like, he knows.
I know.
You filled him in on all the correspondence we've had about all the yes. Seth hating. Yeah.
Yep. I'm used to it though, so
it was really like 4 gigabytes worth of data. No.
No, oh, we got to play our last session of our campaign. I don't know how
2 years in the making.
Yeah, 2 years in the making. And no, it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed the conclusion. But I don't want to jump there first. I want to talk about gathering the entire party together, because I think that was actually the first time we had everybody who had participated in the game together.
It's true.
Yeah.
Because we had a couple other sessions where one person couldn't make it, so we'd have somebody like sub in.
Yeah.
And things like that. But this time, everyone, the subs, the originals, we were all back.
The co-DM was there.
Right? Playing as a character.
Just huge quotes. Yeah. Huge quotes. Yeah, no. Playing as an NPC, as a character. That was pretty great.
Yeah. So it was fun to have everybody there. We had someone come in via Skype. Mr. Powell joined us.
Yeah, someone. Yeah. Someone, the infamous Mr. Powell.
Right.
Who managed to move away just in time.
It was like, what, a week to 10 days before?
Yeah. 2 weeks, okay. Maybe 3 weeks. But yeah.
Well, for purposes of this podcast, it was literally 2 days.
He was on the road Skyping us.
Yeah.
In the moving van.
Yeah, so first of all, I thought that was really cool. It was good to have everybody almost in the same room and mm-hmm. participating and getting to be a part of this kind of final chapter of the very first kind of D&D session I think any of us had played in. So it was a really nice way to end that campaign.
Yeah,
I agree.
It was good to put a bow on that.
Right.
For sure. Just wrap it up, you know. No loose ends.
Right. And we could talk a lot about that final session, but I think let's just focus on some of our favorite moments.
Mine was like when you guys almost died. That was my favorite part.
That so did not happen. Honestly, now this is going to sound terrible, but honestly, one of my favorite parts for sure was when we had a party member die.
Yeah.
Only because that was so dramatic, and like, it's the finale, you know, the grand showdown.
Right.
And so I basically went into it waiting for at least one or two of us to die, because it's like the fitting into a story. Like, no story ends with everybody just perfect. Like, mm-hmm. that's lame.
Yeah.
So I was almost hoping even someone would die, and sure enough, someone did. I will say though, while I was kind of hoping for that, I was fully expecting it to be me, actually, and I didn't even shy away from it. Like, I did a couple of pretty foolish things.
Right.
Very heroic, but also very foolish things. Almost expecting that I would actually be the one to die, and I even thought that would be cool.
Sure.
And then somehow I survived, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just pretty crazy, having somebody legit get killed.
Capped, yeah, by the big bad of all things.
Exactly. And going into kind of the final session of a campaign, you can, I think, be a little bit more heroic and be a little bit more daring in your maneuvering and your attacking. But yeah, it was pretty cool to have someone taken out. And I'm not sure that it wasn't actually Steven firing an arrow into the back of his compatriot, hoping that someone would die. I don't remember how that played out exactly, but...
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
It was kind of dark in that final chamber there. So anything could have happened.
I definitely did. I won't even deny the fact that I did damage a party member, but it did not kill the person,
right,
or even KO them. So I was relatively safe, but
well, I'm going to kind of summarize my favorite part of our final session and just say I really enjoyed leveling up to a point where, as a magic user, I had a little bit more at my disposal, and being able to utilize a few more spells was a lot of fun. And the ability to kind of spider crawl on walls was a lot of fun to do as well, and just walking through an environment on the ceiling definitely gives you a little bit different perspective on not only how you explore, you know, the world, but how you engage in combat. So I really enjoyed getting to a level where I felt like we were all kind of sinking into our characters and understanding our abilities a little bit more and kind of working together as a team. So that's kind of the aspect that I enjoyed the most, was just... We had come this far. We had built these characters. They were powerful enough to synergize well with everybody else in the party.
Yeah, I agree. That was a lot of fun. It seemed like actually in the last session, it seemed like during that fight is when we finally really clicked as a unit and as a team. And then that just kind of carried over, even though have been months in between the sessions, unfortunately. But that still seemed to kind of carry over into this final chapter. And yeah, I think we all did pretty good. We know our characters. We kind of are getting more used to what even our party members are going to do in certain situations, so we can kind of play off that or help them or do whatever. And it just, yeah.
Yeah,
that was a lot of fun to be a part of, for sure.
Did you have a favorite kind of attack moment or combat moment where you felt you did really well or did really poorly in this last session?
Well, I mean, obviously, one of the greatest moments, not combat related, but when you're referring to just doing things poorly was the infamous rope at the very, very start.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Half the party failed the athletics check to just climb down a rope, and we all just fell down like a 20-foot little cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost like almost half my health. It was ridiculous. And it was literally before we even saw a single enemy.
It was
the first thing, and I just fall off the rope, break my back, and it was, oh man. You know, normally I'd be kind of salty about that, but that was so funny. That was so awesome.
Right. No, it was great. I especially liked, too, when then Josh was like, I'm going to do acrobatics down it. And then natural one just tries to do some flashy move and then ends up just getting slammed into the wall and the ground.
It is pretty awesome when your rogue, who is supposed to be this dexterous, kind of athletic and acrobatic fiend, just totally fails on something as simple as climbing down a rope.
Yep. Well, and of course, like the confidence with which he said it too, when he's just like, I'm gonna do this, this, and this, and this, and then he just whoosh, rolls his dice out, and then boom, right on his butt. As far as combat goes, I mean, technically, Adam, you and I had the finishing blows on both of the bosses.
That's true, yeah.
Because we're just that amazing. We're that much of just bosses in our own right. So, I mean, that was obviously cool. I always enjoy, in any of the sessions, when I get a kill, whether it's just a standard minion or, obviously, a greater foe.
Right.
It's always kind of satisifying when I get credited, you know, with the final blow on something. But
right, because you get to put a little notch in your shield, you know.
Exactly.
Another kill.
Well, and I actually was... I had a kill tally on the back of my character sheet, even, just for kicks. And I'm pretty sure I wrote down the names of all, like, the bosses and lieutenants, so to speak, that I killed. And then the just standard minions, I kept just a typical little tally.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure by the end of it all, if you include bosses and whatnot, I had somewhere around, you know, 20 or more kills, I think. I'm not sure.
Nice.
But it seemed pretty solid, especially when you have a party of, how many did we have? 7, I think, in the very final chapter. I think we had like 7 players.
So
that's a lot
head.
Of people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of people to get kills, of course. And so anytime you can get one of those on your record, that's a satisfying moment.
Right.
But I honestly think my favorite thing that I did, though, it didn't even work. That was the sad thing. Like, it was another one of those things where it was great in concept, I feel, but it just technically failed. We were battling the Wraith, I guess, but it was protecting this chest of items in its burned down house. And then Kaylee was like, oh, well, I want the stuff in the chest. And then he attacked her and just like wrecked her. And so trying to be very heroic, this is what I mean by being heroic yet foolish, I actually ran past the Wraith towards his chest. And the idea was, if I can get to the chest and if I touch it, he'll target me instead.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way I can save my party member and I will take the damage. And then even if I die or whatever, at least I go down, you know, helping someone. That was very, like, that was my goal.
Right.
And I run by him, and he gets an opportunity attack on me even, and I take all this damage, and I'm like, oh man, it's perfect. I will go out such a hero. And I get to the chest, and I touch it, and then he didn't give a crap. I went all the way in there, and I touched the chest, and he was like, whatever, and he just kept attacking
right.
Kaylee, and it was so depressing.
So you positioned yourself as to where Kaylee is now the shield between you and this Wraith. It worked out really well for you.
Yeah. Well, again, it was very noble in intent, but oh well.
So, Seth, how do you think this final session went?
I think it went pretty well. I think it was a tough session, just a long one for sure, mm-hmm. and kind of not being right into it. It was, I think, hard for people to kind of get pulled back into it.
Right.
So it was tough. But I think everyone gave it their all, and there were definitely a lot of good moments.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely you guys did a lot of surprising things.
So as a game master, Can you walk us through maybe some of the things that surprised you that happened during our last session and how you kind of countered story-wise and mechanically?
Let's see. Well, so I'll say, I don't know, I guess we'll just say right now, if you haven't played The Lost Mines of Phandelver and you want to be surprised, then you can fast forward a little bit here. So I'm just going to talk about a few things. They're not like huge surprises or spoilers, right, really, but I mean, just a disclaimer. But so in the fungal caverns, when you guys tried to go through and ended up doing all this stuff with the rope and like attempting to cross over and climb over, I was really surprised you guys didn't just try and walk through.
Okay.
It probably would not have been very difficult. And it also would not have done a lot of damage if you failed.
Interesting.
So it was interesting that you didn't, like, everyone who went down there succeeded on their saving throw. Mm-hmm. So you didn't actually ever know how much it was going to do, but just the threat of it enough, which, I mean, makes sense. It makes sense that you wouldn't want to risk getting just like, what, like one hit KO'd by a mushroom. But
but it happens to me in real life all the time.
I was just planning you guys kind of waltzing through that area. So that was kind of funny.
Well, I was still kind of being the strong, silent type for most of it, but it definitely did occur to me. I almost did speak up and say, like, well, how about one of us just, like, walk or run through it? Like, it's not that complex. But then I enjoyed the idea of firing a rope arrow across the chasm and doing all that. It just was more epic that way. Mm-hmm. So I went with it, but it definitely occurred to me, like, I feel like we're overcomplicating this, but it was fun.
That's what D&D is all about, again, is trivializing things that are important and overcomplicating things that don't matter.
Well, and I think
that's, like, literally the whole game.
Yeah, and I think all of us were anxious to kind of redeem ourselves with another rope maneuver. So being able to climb another rope, and I think we all successfully did, was very redeeming.
In fact, it was funny because when Josh basically did just a tightrope walk down the line, getting, you know, an acrobatics check, and he redeemed himself,
right,
and he walked across, I, just a human ranger, was like, you know what the heck, I'll try. And I actually succeeded as well. Mm-hmm. So then even the dude ranger,
right,
was able to, like, tightrope across it. Right. So not only did we succeed at the second rope, but we were even super stylish because, right, you know, we had to, our pride was so wounded from the first one. We overcompensated hardcore.
I guess I should say that first rope was another moment where I did not think that was going to happen to you guys. But, I mean, I usually think that, like, climbing a rope should be pretty trivial, but in the book it says specifically, like, the difficulty class of this rope, so I was like, well, it must be just a tricky point, and it turned out to be, so
that's funny.
There,
well,
you go.
It was low light and it was probably a little damp in there, and there are a lot of factors.
We were all nervous,
yeah,
you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if you're not used to climbing ropes, it can be tricky.
Well, and
yeah.
I mean, and we're diving into an enemy dungeon, so naturally we'd be on edge, I think. Just like, what's going to be down there when we get to the bottom of the rope? And so, I mean, you know, you can rationalize it all you want, though.
Right.
And at the end of the day, we still fell off a rope.
Yep.
Just a bunch of adventurers just falling off a rope.
Classic.
I love that we have been talking about our D&D session for like 15 or 20 minutes, and like half of that has been us talking about how we fell off of a rope.
it was important. It was the formative moment.
Yeah. Okay.
That's, role playing is so awesome when that can be like the highlight of a session, is climbing down a rope.
Well, remember way back session one of the highlights was Mr. Powell attempting to throw the rope up onto the bridge with his boot on the end, or whatever, and totally missing because he couldn't even throw the shoe. So basically, there's a theme that our party just cannot do ropes at least like 66% of the time.
Yeah, right.
That's true. You guys definitely skipped over at first the area with the wraith. You just like walked past it.
Yes.
And then you went up to like one of the most biggest and important rooms in the whole thing, like, talk to the denizen, and then just like, we better leave that alone. That was crazy, because you guys remember how many magic items I gave you at the end?
Yeah.
I was fully expecting you guys to take those, like, look through the room, ignore the, like, warning, fight that guy. Would have been a cool fight. Take the magic items, and then use those on, like, that big final fight. And no. I was like, how? Because, I mean, I want to give you guys stuff, but, like, I don't want to just, you know, like, drop it in your lap. Be like, right. Oh, you walk through the door, and there's a magic staff on the ground in front of you. So I feel like that wouldn't be rewarding for either of us.
Right.
And so I don't know. I think I need to figure something out. Like, I probably should have explained in more detail, like, there are specific items that catch your eye. But I was like, I thought, like, saying a magic workshop would prompt investigation. Nope. So that was interesting, and I don't think that I handled that well, but that's just something I need to know.
That was actually
later.
Really funny, yeah.
It was, yeah.
I don't think you handled it that poorly, though. We definitely just came out of left field with our solution, so all things considered.
Which was to back out of the room slowly and close the door behind us, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did enjoy, you mentioned to me afterwards, and I mean, this isn't really much of a... It's not a spoiler or anything, but
we're in the spoiler zone.
Yeah. When we got to the end and we did actually complete everything, because we hadn't killed that guy, I thought it was cool that you actually made him friendly. Or like you had him just be kind of allied with us to an extent.
Yeah.
As far as that was kind of cool, because it's scripted that we just kill that guy. Odds are we would fight and kill that guy. But I thought it was funny that you ad-libbed the fact that he was just there at the end and was like, oh, okay, cool. You guys are my buddies. That was funny.
Yeah.
Well, and for those listening that do want to maybe run through this kind of starter set for D&D, which I will be running through as a GM here probably within the next few months, Seth, can you give us some advice for a new GM running through this starter set? Maybe some of the things you would do differently or some of the things you definitely repeat with this particular adventure?
Well, for this adventure specifically, there are a few things. I think the majority of them are probably with that final area. I think the first encounters and stuff that you do are pretty tight, pretty well constructed. They lead the players through them in a logical manner. But there's like one thing that I still am not good at, and that's you really need to like lead the players. Like I always want to just like drop a vague hint and then like have you guys like figure that out and realize it. But more often than not, you just take it as like flavor or you just forget about it. And so it's really easy to become not invested when the story is kind of hidden. And so even though sometimes it feels like DM fiat, just kind of like, so by the way, this guy you're trying to fight was an ally of this other person. And that's a pretty big deal. Like he was part of a noble faction that betrayed them. Like, how do you guys feel about that? Like actually bringing that out there instead of just kind of hinting that. Yeah, just more kind of explicit.
Just direction, I suppose.
Or yeah, like... direction.
Well, yeah. I often hear James D'Amato from the One Shot podcast describe GMing as kind of you don't want to hide the levers from your players. So your party walks into a room, they see a lever, they're going to pull it. But if they don't see the lever, then they can't pull the lever. So I think that's what I hear you saying, and I think that's good advice.
Yeah, no, and I think more than that, it's like in my rooms there are definitely levers, but it's like unless you look through the room for something interesting, like you won't see the lever. Like it's just on the wall. It's not like right in the middle of the room. But oftentimes you walk into a room and you're like, oh well, we'll fight the enemies in here and then just leave. It's like, wait, no. No.
Well, I was levers. Definitely I kind of picked up on that enough, like that I guess your style. to where, I don't know if you guys noticed or not, but almost every room we went into, I was trying to do like perception checks and look around and just see if I could find anything, because I don't know. You definitely, you're into the subtleties, Seth. So I was like, every room we go into could have a whole bunch of secrets for all I know. Yeah, so I'm going to try to find what I can. And then the only unfortunate thing was most of my checks, you know, I didn't roll super great. And so it seemed like I didn't really find a whole lot. But
yeah. No, most of the rooms you guys actually went in, you kind of skipped over half the rooms that had like hidden loot. So that was just unfortunate. But
true. I mean, that map was like massive, and we definitely only went into like half of it. But
well, I think a lot of that too is on us as kind of being this young crew of role players, being very kind of still a little bit green. So not necessarily even knowing that we're supposed to go into a room and do perception checks and things of this nature early on, like Steven alluded to. I mean, he said, I finally kind of figured out Seth's kind of style, and you know, we had to learn as we went along. And I think we did do a lot more of that in this final campaign. We tried to open a safe for about half an hour and doing a lot of perception checks to look for keys and ways to get into this thing. But I think we got there, and I think anything we do moving forward, I think we'll be a little bit more in tune with how to actually navigate the environment.
Well, yeah, one thing that I always feel, I don't know, a little bit of pressure on is sometimes when you have a lot of players and you've been playing for a few hours already, I sometimes feel as though if I'm constantly wanting to do checks and like slow down the progress, I guess, or like get things bogged down with the little details, like it could potentially almost annoy, I guess, the other party members. If not all of them are super invested in it, then it becomes like, wow, Steven, why are you freaking doing another perception check? Or, you know, so sometimes I try to kind of keep it a little bit more balanced and not go overboard just because I don't want to, you know, slow us down too much.
Right.
Which that also can, I don't know, kind of adjust. I mean, if you have a smaller group and all of you are really into it and everybody's just doing checks left and right, then that could be kind of crazy. But if you have a little bit more of a, I guess, a casual group, then maybe you don't have to worry about as many of the details. I guess it just kind of depends.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody plays these games for different reasons, and their characters all have different motivations, and it's hard to balance all of that, because I think you're right, some people just wanted to get to stuff and start slashing and hacking, and others wanted to actually explore, and others wanted to have a little bit of narrative to accompany all that. It's tough as a game master, Seth, for you to balance all of that, and I think you did a pretty good job.
Thanks. I definitely try. It is difficult. I mean, you just described the three pillars of role-playing.
Right.
So it seems like everybody should be wanting to do those. I mean, obviously in different amounts. But yeah, no, it is tough. And I mean, especially when we had our largest group yet, there's a lot of kind of conflicting ideas of what should be happening just to the nature of so many people. So
yeah.
It's tricky, and yeah, you can forget a lot of things in the heat of the moment, and so then you're like, oh man, I wish I had introduced that in there, or did this, or whatever, but yeah, it's just a game. You guys are all going through the same dungeon, doing the same stuff.
Right. Well, and again, doing a roleplay game is just storytelling with friends, and I think the game master is more kind of the instigator of the story, and I think there's a lot of pressure on the game master to try and be this storyteller, but it's, I mean, it's really about the players trying to tell this story and you kind of leading them along.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
You're and more or less just the narrator.
Right.
Yeah. Well, a lot of game masters want to tell the story themselves. And I mean, that's fine, but you have to let like the players do it.
Right.
And I'm on kind of the opposite spectrum where I don't want to be the one pushing the story, but I want to have like all the elements in place so all the players need to do is like go for it.
Right.
Because, I mean, I've got stories that are happening. I have ideas of how I want things to turn out or how things, like, turned out, like, just previously to this fight. Like, how did the boss get here or whatever? Like, there's all this narrative. But I'm not just going to, like, cutscene you guys, you know, like you walk through the dungeon, it's like, wait a minute, your vision goes black, and then you see the vision, you see the picture of the black spider and his conquest and his fighting and his pushing.
Yeah,
it's like, no, you have to pick up on the little hints if you want to figure that out or talk to him.
Yeah, well, I know we plan to do this again, maybe on a smaller scale, you know, do more of these sessions and give them to you guys to listen to. We plan to switch things up a little bit on the podcast, and I think just freshen it up for the three of us more than anything. We've been doing this for almost 3 years now, and we'd like to try some new things. So you all need to buckle up and be prepared for some adventures in the not too distant future.
Whoa. Teaser.
Yeah. Yeah.
What could it mean?
But I don't know. Do you guys have any final thoughts before we wrap up episode 45?
Dude, final thoughts. We didn't even hit like half the show notes. How wild we're going to be.
What do we mean half?
We didn't talk about the new shipment of games. We didn't review Suspicion. We didn't.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is, it's more like 75% that we didn't do.
True. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
I agree.
Well, now we've got a lot more to talk about on the next episode.
I still have so much to talk about.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Now we'll be just so hyped up for the next episode that it'll be great.
It will be great. They're always great.
Well, where can everybody play games with you if they make it to our neck of the woods?
Well, if you make it to Casper, Wyoming, just start wandering down East 12th Street.
Oh, we have
with a bunch of games. And I'll spot you.
Nice, nice.
Or you can come to Casper First Assembly of God on Sunday mornings at 10:30, and I will be there.
Nice.
Looking like just a swag master. And I will track you down there as well.
You can find me at Rooks on Sunday afternoons. If I can make it, Tuesday evenings, and that's rare. And then sometimes other days during the week, the weekend. Just hang out there for a week, and odds are I'll be there at some point.
Nice. And you can always find me at the Billings Vineyard on Sunday morning. You can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook or at our website at bgpov.com as well. We always love to get emails and hear from you all. So I think that's going to be an episode, boys. So tune in again.
Wait.
I need to close it out.
Just totally moved past this comment. Yeah.
So tune in again for episode 46 coming down the road. Good night, everybody.
Let's talk outside.
Oh my gosh. Salty much?
No. Dude. Yes. I have a high daily intake of sodium.
You just rub it in and about your eyes.
Oh yeah.
Isn't that what everyone does?
I think so.
Because I can't cry otherwise, so.
I use it as moisturizer myself.